Hey, listeners. Today's episode is brought to you by Kind Bar. Kind is deeply committed to crafting food with real recognizable ingredients, a disruptive notion that sparked the creation of a new healthy snacking category. Kind is unapologetic in their efforts to challenge the status quo, to shift the food industry and empower the community and our listeners to make better, more informed choices about their health. Kindness can be a transformative force for good, and that is why we are teaming up with Kind to bring our listeners 10% off or 15% off for military, teachers, students, first responders, doctors, and nurses. Go to podgo.co/kind. That's podgo.co/kind. Kind Bar, creating a kinder and healthier world, one act, one snack at a time. Welcome back, Inebriates. This is Andy, the Inebriar Podcast. And, you know, COVID's been a weird thing. And basically, we've been able to interview a lot of people that we wouldn't normally have access to because of Zoom and just being stuck in the house. And I have a growing list of people that we have been talking with, pretty much thanks to Spiritual Records. But in the UK and in the London area, and it is now, as soon as Americans are allowed to travel, I think it's going to be a place that I need to hit up ASAP. And today's guest is from that area. It's now, is it Jack Treble or Jack's Treble? I don't know. Sorry.
Just Jack Treble.
Jack Treble. Okay. So welcome to the show, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
So, Kyle Hurley has been sending us a lot of musicians our way. So you're one of the Spiritual Record group. So how is it going in London? I haven't talked to anyone there in, I don't know, maybe a month or so. Are things starting to return to normal, or are you playing music out again?
There's gigs going on, but to be honest, it's just got a little bit worse because they've just released a tier system. And London is basically, it's a three-tier system of medium, high, and very high. And London's just gone into the high category. So you can't meet with people outside of your household unless you're outside, which isn't really ideal because it's basically coming up to winter now. So it's pretty cold. But you can if you work. So it's all very up in the air, completely, like, completely confusing situation. So people are still trying to make things happen, but yeah, I think it's due any moment to get worse.
Yeah, next. It's been getting kind of worse here again, and you know, with the kids back to school, and you know, just the weather being, like you said, being cold, people are indoors more, so they don't have that kind of buffer that you would have outside. So hopefully it won't be too bad. We're trying to be proactive, but we are kind of stepping back. We have like a numbered stage, but it's like so stupid. It's like stage one, stage two, stage three, stage 3.5, stage 3.7, you know. So it's well, you know, it's we're all trying to figure it out as we go, but
for sure. Similar to what we have here then.
Yeah. So did you get to play any gigs or?
Well, I've not really been actively looking, to be honest. In the situation, I feel like obviously it's if you can do it safely, then you should get back out there. But for me, I think I'm kind of, I'm not going to say enjoying it. That's a bad way to put it, but I guess making the best of a strange situation. So I've spent most of the lockdown recording and working with people, and you know, kind of get more into that area of the musical side of things, because you know, I feel like also the stuff I play, it's not really appropriate for a socially distanced gig. Like the best nights we had is where it's totally crazy, loads of people all kind of jam-packed together, sweaty bars. So in the situation, I don't feel like it it's really my time yet to come back, but I'm keeping myself busy, so it's okay.
Yeah, it's weird. I went and saw a friend's band play. I don't know. I think it was back in August, and it's a very rock, rowdy kind of band. And you have everyone sitting at tables like 15 feet apart outdoors. So it was great to see live music, but it was weird. And I was talking with a bar. A bit less
bad in August, I think, as well.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Around here it was open. Yeah. And it was nice out, so it wasn't a big deal. How long have you been playing professionally, and like, what was kind of the catalyst that got you into music?
Well, catalyst that got me into music was certainly my dad, he's a musician himself. He got me into the guitar he tried to when I was about six, wasn't at all interested, and then found my own way in when I was about 11, just started playing. Been making music for quite a while now, but I didn't really start taking it super, like, kind of getting out there a bit more. It's maybe like 2017 or so, 2018 sort of time. So really on the circuit for about 2 years or so now.
It's funny, like, everyone I talk to seems to kind of get into music. It's like between like 11 and I'd say like 14 is like when they all seem to kind of start getting into it. Why do you think it's that specific age? I mean, like, I always joke, I'm like, oh, it's just to get chicks. But like, is it that simple, or is there like something else about that age, do you think?
To be fair, in that statement, there is some truth, of course.
Yeah.
But to be honest, I think so. When I was about six, my dad got me a guitar. A left-handed guitar, because I'm left-handed. Mm-hmm. And I remember specifically going to lessons and learning Baba Black Sheep with this dude who I didn't massively get on with. He was very sort of very academic way of looking at music.
Yeah.
Always got upset because I never practiced, wasn't really interested. And then when I was about 11, the first band I got into was Green Day.
Okay, yeah, sure.
So, you know, at that point, it was me actively being like I had my own identity of what I liked. So I was like, okay, this is cool. I remember just one day, one evening, after I first started getting into that sort of, started getting into music myself, I just went to my dad and said, I think I'm ready. I want to learn. And that night just went full, head first, right into it, started learning. And actively have not stopped for about
14
years.
So. Nice. I wonder if it has something to do with like that age is it's the same kind of age where you start kind of identify what you like. Because you mentioned Baba Black Sheep, and it took me back to, you know, the days of learning clarinet in school band, where you played, you know, Hot Cross Buns, and, you know, then you played Christmas songs because you're going to play a Christmas concert. But when you get to that 11, you know, to 14 stage, you're like getting exposed to new things, and you can take that and be like, you know, I want to learn to play guitar, but I want to learn to play this Green Day song.
Yeah. You don't really, when you're a kid, you don't really say, you know, I just really want to learn that one killer song from that school's assembly, Baba Black Sheep.
Yeah.
It's not really an incentive to want to learn. Whereas, when you decide, that's when it's most, that's the most appropriate time to learn, is when you decide it's my time now, I want to get into it.
And there's nothing glamorous about Baba Black Sheep. It's like the Stones have never gone out and been like, hey, London, and broken into, you know, Baba Black Sheep, which if they did, that'd be amazing.
For sure. When Clapton did Over the Rainbow.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, this is amazing. It's one of my favorite songs ever now. Just because now I hear it in a new light.
So, I mean, and that's an interesting thing, is to kind of take songs in like a new direction. Is that something that you tried? I mean, do you do covers at all, or is it solely originals? You just, you know.
Well, when I first started gigging, I started, my first well-paid gig in the last 2 years was playing Prince.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Which, that was the main... I did them in a relatively similar-ish way. It was just we can. But I don't have a problem with covers. I often cover my peers some nights when I'm playing, like, people I know on the circuit. I cover some
of that's cool.
Stuff. And also, also like covering my dad's music as well a lot. Some on when the moment strikes, sometimes I cover one of his songs as well, but in a very different way to how he might have done it.
Yeah. So where he's a musician too, do you ever like, is it something where you've ever like played on stage with him, or is that kind of like on your bucket list, or?
We've never played together in a like proper setting, but to be honest, I think in this, this situation happened where I was just at home and I'm just hanging out and I'm like playing a lot of guitar, recording a lot. I've started to do more just recording for the sake of it and just getting things done.
Yeah.
But I think in time, what I will want to do is make a cover, record a cover of one of his songs and maybe put it on a project, because he's an amazing songwriter. And like a really like a sort of songwriter where his songs would work in so many different settings, from being played in their original format. They could even work as like a big grandiose pop song or like an R&B song. They cover a lot of ground in terms of where you can gauge what genre they could be. Yeah. So I'd like to do that.
And I don't know if it's just kind of a Spiritual Records thing, or if it's a trend in London, but it seems like everyone we talk to is kind of like a rock blues kind of musician. Is that just because that's what Spiritual Records does and that's who we're connected with, or is that kind of like a trend in London?
To be honest, it's not really a trend in London.
No.
I think we're kind of the...
You're setting the trend.
Maybe one day, but in due time. But to be honest, it's not the most popular genre of music. There's a couple of blues bars, but it's mainly people who play standards, or it's more like a kind of almost like a function sort of thing rather than like a fresh new sound of like, oh, cool, it's like a new form of blues rock. Obviously, if you'd speak to people from Spiritual Records, then there's quite a few of them who are making great music in that genre, like Robert J. Hunter, for instance. He has quite a lot of different sounds to his music, but one thing he does really well is that very dirty blues rock sound. So I think there's a market for it. I think most guitar players enjoy playing the blues to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of a big scene, or even going to see bands where you might hear a blues, it's quite rare.
What's the current climate there music-wise? Is it like, you know, metal? Like, and I hate kind of, I especially hate asking musicians like what kind of music they play, because nowadays it's so kind of blended together. But is there kind of like something real predominant? Like here in Plymouth, we get a lot of kind of, not necessarily, we have a lot of Grateful Dead cover bands, but kind of jam bands, that kind of thing. But, you know, is there like a trend that over there?
There's quite a lot of indie bands in London for sure. Lots of like kind of crossover synth.
Mm-hmm.
Pop rock sort of stuff. Depends on the scene. Like Camden, to be honest, hasn't got much music there as it once did, but there's quite a lot of good rock bands and metal bands around. But outside of that, I hate to say it, but I don't really listen to much.
Actively listening to it. So what is it that you are listening to that you find kind of like inspirational? Is it just blues, or like
what? Not at all. One of my two favorite bands are Steely Dan and Toto.
Oh, nice. Toto has had a huge resurgence because it was because of Green Day. Yeah. And that I don't know, it was so weird. It just seemed to kind of come out of nowhere.
It was this phenomenon of yacht rock, I think, that did it.
Yeah.
That made everyone realize, oh my God, Toto are an amazing band. And they're just like some of the coolest musicians of all time. There's so many things that can back that up, from the amount of albums they worked on. Really amazing albums.
And that's a band I've never like really given, you know, obviously I know Africa.
For sure.
But I've never like really given them a real good listen to. I'll have to like sit down and.
Well, a good way to start, I would say, is look at the album credits for Michael Jackson's Thriller album. And you can see a lot of Toto.
Really?
Huh. For sure. Yeah, it's amazing. Like Steve Lukather, the guitarist, he wrote the main riff for Beat It.
No kid. It's so funny. Like, I think that part of like music is kind of, I don't know, it's not made public enough or glossed over, but like I was watching a thing on Isaac Hayes the other night, and he was talking about all the songs that he'd written for other people. And is that something that even in a, you know, a smaller community like yourself there in London, like, do you guys write for other people? Is there like a lot of collaborative work amongst
you? Oh, yeah, for sure. One of the most interesting things, to be honest, about Spiritual Bar, if you look at, for instance, so I play with a live band a lot, not so much these days, but I have like a live band who perform with me. There's Adam Sheffield on drums, amazing drummer. He plays a lot with theatre,
which is really interesting. Yeah.
And then if you look at Greg Sheffield, they're both brothers, of course, he plays bass.
Yeah.
He plays in about 4 different bands, all in the same scene.
Yeah.
So we kind of all share him around.
Oh, that's
He's
nice.
He's quite a multi-instrumentalist. There's a lot of people who songwrite together, but the main thing is that we mainly play in other people's bands, or we share band members.
Oh, that's cool. We kind of have a little bit of that here, and it's more, you know, there'll be one band that plays, and then the lead singer may play a couple nights somewhere else just by, you know, under his own name, and then they also have a cover band. It's the same exact band, but they don't want their band to be thought of as a cover band, so when they get a cover band gig, they change the name of the band.
Yeah,
which I think is a clever marketing thing, but it's I think it's really cool when there's like a really supportive scene. How long have you been with Spiritual Records, and how did you get involved with them?
I first stumbled upon Spiritual Bar in about 2017 because I started a job in Camden, and a friend of mine said, "This is the only place you should come. This is the best bar." And I was kind of like, "Okay." You walk in, it's very dark. Lots of like writing on the walls. It's like very like kind of a, as it's described by Google, a bohemian sort of atmosphere in there.
Yeah.
And I remember just walking in, just being like, okay, this is my sort of place, I guess. Yeah.
One of those places that just felt comfortable.
Yeah, for sure. And it's just like, there's no other place where you walk in there and it's got this really unique energy. And, I remember just sitting there and listening to a few of the musicians. I was like, what the f-? This is outrageous. Like, this is just normal people just like walking in here. They look so like, you know, just like another person who would come here, and they start singing, and it's just like amazing. Like, really like hold a whole room full of people. And I was always interested. I wanted to play because I think I kind of looked at it and was like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
Because I was very much a kind of more studio sort of person. So I walked in one night, they're doing an open mic, kicked myself about 50 times watching it and not doing it. And then a few times I then started bringing my guitar, bombed really hard.
That's normal.
Yeah, the owner or the guy who kind of runs the place, the eyes of Spiritual Bar, Raphael, said, yeah, you suck, you play pop music. And I was just like, you know, took it not in such a, oh no, so I guess this is it. And it kind of made me think, I'm going to play pop music in such a way that you are going to not even think of it as a pop song anymore. And then I'll show you. Went back a few more times, kept trying. And then eventually he invited me to play one of my songs, because I'd then played a few nights there to play one of my songs on their compilation album. It's a song called Everything, which is online now. It's been out for a while. And from there, just started playing there all the time and started kind of writing music for their stage. I kind of looked at the crowd and kind of understood more what they wanted, what they liked, and also knew that more about what I liked as well. And kind of created this a totally different sound to what I was playing, entirely based off of, I want it to be kind of a soundtrack for this place. So a lot of the songs on the upcoming album were written, not just usually upstairs in that bar, but also kind of written on stage.
Yeah.
Over many nights of just like playing the same songs to a different crowd and being like, I guess like over the repetition of playing the songs, constantly evolving them and changing them until they kind of become the song that they are now. And then we did my first release through that. And yeah, I've been kind of been part of the furniture there for about 2 years now. So
nice.
They're kind of like a family to me.
Yeah, it sounds like it, that it's a close-knit group. You mentioned how you learned kind of what the crowd wanted to hear. How much do you kind of like, I think that's something that not enough musicians do. I mean, it's, you always want to write for yourself, but at the same time you want other people to enjoy your music. So is it, when you're writing, do you spend a lot of time considering that, or
not really? So it's a kind of weird thing of Spiritual Bar is open 6 days a week, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of weeks I play a Friday night, and other times I might play a weekday or a Sunday, kind of the chilled sort of day.
Mm-hmm.
Where the energy of the room was totally different. So there was a few songs where I was like, okay, we're playing Friday night. What would be the perfect song for a Friday night in this place? So that kind of conceived a lot of the more up, sort of more faster songs, the more up sort of songs. And then the quiet nights, it was kind of more like a more intimate sort of situation where it was, that's where a lot of the ballads and other sort of more slower songs were written. So it's not so much like, oh, I just wanted to make everyone happy, but more that I wanted to fit the energy of the people who are there. And it's always true to myself, for sure. I think it was just a method that I used to kind of sculpt the sound.
So it's more about like crafting the set list to fit the right audience.
Absolutely, no. Yeah.
Do you kind of think about the order of the songs to kind of, I mean, and it's such a cool thing to be able to talk about, to be like, you know, I craft my set list to control the emotion of the audience, which is to think that you have that kind of impact on people. So cool. But do you kind of like start big and then kind of taper off some slower stuff and finish? But like, do you kind of like try to work out which ones? Yeah.
For sure. Usually you start big, kind of like a mid-tempo, then play some more along that sort of lines, then slow down, and then like speed up. Some songs are heavier. Some songs are more like R&B, soul jams. And then kind of like building into, kind of like just kind of go going through the motions of how I'd want it to feel. And that's also from watching so many live gigs, loads of different artists from different time periods, and kind of seeing that how they would sculpt a perfect show. It wasn't just like really fast songs, one after the other. It was always the right song in the right place.
Mm-hmm. Who have you seen that you would say is that kind of perfect show that like you try to emulate?
In terms whether of
live or
watched?
Either way. Like what jumps to my mind is Queen at Live Aid.
Oh, there you go.
I wasn't there, but I've seen it. It was amazing. Yeah. But would you say there's like one band that you like, they really control the crowd through their music that way?
Two that I would say, first off, would be, I don't know if you've ever seen it, Prince, Sign of the Times concert movie.
I think I might have seen like clips from it on YouTube.
Yeah. One sec.
Sure.
Yeah, that's that is an amazing, amazing concert. It's just like so outrageous. It goes from through all of the different styles that he plays, but it's also very very theatrical. It's almost like musical theater at times in the way that it's organized.
Yeah.
And then another concert that, I mean, I have seen him live at a later stage in his career where it was really good, but quite different to this, was John Mayer, Where the Light Is, which is without a doubt one of the best recorded concerts, even if it's been edited down for the case of the DVD or the album itself, but the general sound and the set list of it is pretty spot on. And even the way that he'll have a song that on the record might be 5 minutes, will go on for like 10 minutes of like, just like playing with what the song is and adding new elements and changing the melodies, the harmonies, and for maybe like a whole 3 minutes, he plays like a solo over one of his more, let's say maybe one of his more popular songs. He'll have it suddenly turn into a blues where he'll then solo and the band really kicks up a fuss. Yeah, that's a pretty impressive concert as well.
Do you kind of have, I mean, obviously you kind of plan the song order for an album, but is it a different task, or like how do you, like, is there a different goal? Because obviously at the end of, you know, the night at club, you want everyone to feel like it was a party and it was a good time, but is there kind of like a different vibe that you go for when you're kind of figuring out song order for an album?
To be honest, the album track list is pretty similar to the set, except a few changes, being that I think the album has a few songs switched around, but also some of the ballads, like I might not play some of the ballads on the same night, like two separate ones on the same night, just because they're a bit too down to have on a concert, but then I might play them on a different night, a more quiet night where it might end the set.
Yeah.
So, I'd say that part of the album sound is definitely based on those nights. It's actually based off of one particular concert that we did at Spiritual Bar last year on my birthday.
Nice.
That it's based off of, which was a crazy show. That it was like one of the best we've ever played. And a lot of the songs structurally were actually based off, because I film a lot of, or record a lot of the sets to know like what I don't like, what I do like, and kind of just base the recorded versions off of certain recordings of like that one felt amazing, what was in it happened that made it feel so good.
Is that something that's common with musicians. I don't know if I've ever seen anyone do it, kind of that record yourself and watch it back. I know it's a very common thing for stand-up comics to do.
Yeah. I think there's a fair amount of musicians that do it, but there's also a lot who, like, there's often many nights where I don't think to. But then there's other nights where it's like, okay, I have a good feeling tonight, so I'm going to record this set and see what happens. Because whilst one song might not go as planned, in the same way, one song might just be the best version of it we've ever played. And then it's like, okay, let's listen back to it and figure out what happened. The same with the rehearsals as well. I record a lot of those just to listen back and kind of know what's going on. Because often when you are then, when you start playing a song so many times, you start to become kind of programmed to just play it as it is, almost like it's written down in your head.
Right.
So when you have those nights where things start to go a little bit off the rails and certain things happen, like maybe there was like one moment where one note in the second verse was like, that was cool, we should record that, or that lick you played there on the bass, that needs to go on the record.
That accident was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even like in the moment where, like, one of my favorite was one of the songs on the later songs in the set called For Once in Your Life. Bass player Greg, out of nowhere, like, wasn't planned, it was like, you know, we've done a rehearsal, we know what we're doing. In the bridge, he just played this one thing on the bass that was just like, I just remember looking at him like, oh, what was that? That was incredible. Like, where did that come from? And then he's smiling at me. Everyone's like, kind of like, yeah, that was cool. So that then, like, if that wasn't recorded, then it would just be one of those moments that was like.
Right. The next day you're like, what was that that you played? And you'd be like, I don't remember what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's really important sometimes to get that moment.
So the new album, that was written prior to COVID, correct?
Yes. This album has been in the works for about 2 years.
So have you found your, because you said you've been doing a lot of writing, have you found your writing and recording change because of COVID? Is like the mood changed? Like, are you doing it to kind of keep yourself sane? Like, has there... we were talking about this on an earlier podcast with someone about how, like, I don't feel like a lot of love songs are going to be coming out for the next year or so, you know, but maybe breakup songs. So it's like, I'm curious to see kind of how people are changing their writing during all this.
I think my writing wasn't really affected because, to be honest, I have always had a way of songwriting where it always depends on the day, depends what instrument I decide to play on that day, something might come out. Like, I'm constantly writing songs that might, if I was to break down all of my influences or styles that I play, some days I might be like, today I feel like writing something that's quite, well, I don't ever say that out loud, but like, sometimes my brain will just automatically start to play something that feels a bit more, say, more on R&B soul, like that's what my brain is asking for on that day. And then other days it will be like something a bit more bluesy or something a bit more rocky, or not I hate to use these sorts of phrases because I hate the defining these by genre
in
a lot of ways, but it kind of always is fluctuating depending on how I feel. The one thing that I guess I am missing from COVID is those songs that were written to bounce off of human, and like that were written from the stage,
right?
Bouncing off of people. That those songs are kind of missing at the moment.
Have you done any live streaming? I know a lot of people have been doing it, and it's one of those, like, it's live streaming music to me is kind of like frozen pizza. Still pizza, but it's just not, you know,
it's just something missing, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah. I did a few, and I experimented with like some that were just done like this on the phone, super simple.
Mm-hmm.
Then other ones where it was like HD audio, and I thought that might be like, oh, this will make it feel better. It's like, no, it's never that. Like, depending on the night, I could literally probably play a gig plugged into nothing, playing like through the crappiest amp or like a borrowed guitar or really crappy mic or anything. But there is nothing at all that you can do in streaming that can compensate for the fact that playing music is not always about writing songs for yourself, but it's all about the connection between you and the listener. And when you don't feel their energy in front of you or around you, it really affects how you play. Like, really what I was doing, I was literally in this room right here playing gigs. And it didn't feel the same. I couldn't quite get into it. I couldn't, you know, have that same connection. So eventually I just kind of gave up on the idea of wanting to do it that way.
You know, and it's funny. It's like, I think it's the little things that are intangible. Like, you literally, when you're at a club or a concert, you feel them. Like, you can physically feel the music, and you know it there's a level of excitement because of the, it sounds so stupid, but the vibrations, you know.
That's totally it.
Yeah, and you just can't recreate that in any kind of streaming fashion.
You just can't. And there's only so much you can do, but it'll never make up for the fact that we can't be together. And that's one of the most, that's just one thing you just can't get over. You can't ever really get over that. We need to play for people. We can't play for a screen.
Yeah, it was so, I was, you know, been doing a lot of, you guys call them, this is one of those, like, we both speak English, but slightly different. It's takeaway.
Takeaway.
Isn't it like when you go to a restaurant, like that's, you call it takeaway? Yeah, we call it takeout. So, you know, but, you know, just, you know, support the local restaurants to help them stay in business and whatnot. And they're open and you can and be seated in them, but still frequently I get my stuff to go. And I was in there at a friend's place and I saw a buddy of mine, and I was, you know, kind of just chit-chatting for a little bit as I was waiting for my food. And then as I was paying, I'm like, you know what? I'm like, you know, I got Ryan's next beer, and just that ability to buy someone a beer, I was like, oh my God, I miss that kind of like, hey, what's up, man? Let me, you know, buy you a beer. And just those little things that you don't think about until you're like, I can't do that anymore.
I mean, they closed all the bars here, and they've just had a 10 p.m. curfew added to that since they reopened.
Oh, wow.
It was kind of like a, for a while, it was kind of like a table service.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd go to the pub, or bar, if you will. And you'd go
there. Pubs.
You go there with your friends, and you can only have so many of you. And it's like super regulated. You can't go to the tape. You can't go up to the bar. You can't do anything like that. But after so long of not being able to leave your house, it was like, my God, I'll take this any day. This is great. This
Oh, yeah. Amazing. Yeah. It's just the idea of being out in public and bumping into people, you know, and just sitting down and having a meal and a beer is just the best. Like, I was, you know, kind of trying to be productive yesterday, and a friend of mine texted me. He's like, hey, are you downtown? I'm like, dude, I live downtown. He's like, yeah, but are you busy? And I'm like, not really. And we went and grabbed a pizza. It was just like, that's just to be able to do that is nice, but it's not, it's going out is like frozen pizza. You know, it is good, but it's not, it's there's something missing. It's not just,
I almost can't remember what it was like when you could just go out anytime you felt like it.
Yeah, and like
that. It was like it feels like so far gone now. It's like, my God, even if they just said, oh, you can go with people, you can go out to a restaurant now again without people you live with, and you can stay past 10 p.m. I'd be like, wow, everything's fine. We're all going to be okay. But it's like, at one point, that wasn't even something you'd think about. You just walk straight out your house, and London's so interconnected, you could go anywhere so easily. Whereas now it takes a bit more planning, and well, now it you can't really plan to do anything because it can always change.
Yeah, well, hopefully we don't have too much longer. I mean, hoping.
Yeah.
But
hopefully.
Do you think there's going to be like a? Is there going to be like a huge resurgence? Like, is it going to be like a light switch where people are like crazy, or do you think it's going to be much more gradual? Where people are like, well, I'm going to go out to eat, but I'm not going to go out to a bar. I'm not going to go to a club yet. And it's going to be more of a gradual incline back to normal life.
I think, to be honest, as soon as they give us the okay,
yeah,
everything will go back to normal. I think it's been so long now. It's been like, we've been kind of in limbo since March.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty long time.
And that's the tricky. And like, I remember way back in the beginning, I was talking with a friend. He's like, oh, I think handshakes and hugs are done. And I'm like, dude, it's not done. We're not, human beings are not good at giving up things they want for their own safety. So I'm like, they'll come back for sure.
And there's still a huge community of people who still hug
and
handshake, and they don't care. And I wouldn't recommend it, but I totally understand.
Yeah. I have definitely, you know, done some things during COVID where you're like, I probably put myself out there and shouldn't have. And, you know, but, you know, you gotta, it's a balance between trying to be safe and just trying to live life.
Absolutely. That's not even easy in the real world before all this.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Do things that are against our best interests. And I guess we don't really, as human beings, we don't really think about it like that. It's just that now we've been made kind of in a very strict sort of way. You have to think about that.
You can't not think about it. Like, I don't think I've had an interview since March since it hasn't come up at least in some way, just because it's so much a part of everyone's life.
For sure. I mean, everyone's affected. Everyone's affected. And I think, to be honest, in terms of how different industries are affected, I think music has been affected, especially in a really, really unique way, where obviously with streaming music, being replacing like vinyl and CDs and all this sort of like, you know, more normal ways that you could monetize music already. Like I think about near 20 years ago, they literally took that away, and then everyone downloaded illegally. Then everyone got a Spotify account, which to put it in a kinder way, they don't pay musicians in the most reasonable fashion.
They pay them enough to say they pay them.
I think even that is being generous. to put it lightly, they just screw us over so hard. And the only thing we really had was live gigs, obviously merchandise as well. It plays a big part. And then there's other ways through the internet, but it's, to me, it doesn't at all mean anything in terms of music. It's nothing relatable. Like, you get like a lot of artists who are like siding with brands and all this sort of stuff. And it's like, okay, that's really nice. But it's, in terms of like pushing art and music, it's not even in the same conversation. So there's the only real way you can make a living doing music as it is to play gigs.
Yeah.
Now it's like, sorry guys, you can't. It's not like, not only can you not, but it's not safe.
Yeah, like you could actively kill someone, basically.
Yeah, so you've basically demonized us, even if we have the inkling in our head that we want to or we miss it. Like, oh, I feel bad now because if I invite a bunch of people to come dance at my gig, one of them might die.
Yeah.
So it's a really, it's just a really awful situation.
So it was kind of new here, where there were a lot of changes to our unemployment, where now basically people who gig can now apply for unemployment and get unemployment reimbursement. Is the UK doing something like that, or has it always been that way?
I think they do. They have like universal credit that you can apply for if you're a working musician and your work has been drastically affected, then you can apply. And I think even I could apply as a musician. I could say, hey, I'm missing out on certain money, so I could actually benefit from that. But I chose not to, based on the fact that I still have a job. I still have an income stream, even if it's been lessened, of course.
Yeah.
But I have other avenues where I can do things creatively and I can still make a living. But they are helping the people who their main income is being a live musician. But I personally do my fair share of production and mixing as well. So I've been kind of just upped my intake of doing these sort of projects as well to compensate. So I'm working with a few cool artists and just producing their work and adding some creative pieces to it as well. So I'm pretty lucky, to be honest, compared to other people in the situation, that I can still do that.
So when that light switch goes off and things go back to normal, are you looking to tour? Have you been touring outside of London or the UK?
No, I never have, to be honest. That would be a dream in this current situation. But yeah, if it went to a play to a oh
ooh.
Sorry, one sec.
Okay. There we go. There? Yep. Yeah. I can still hear.
So cool. Yeah, so I guess if it was given the okay and everything was like, okay, I can actually do this in a safe manner, then 100% I would love to play. I'd love to play gigs and do more around the world. Even like, I'd love to go to the US and around Europe as well. That would be like a massive thing that I'd want to do. And also just to, like, one thing that I had planned to do in the last few weeks, which I think I only have now a few weeks to really push and get this done, is I wanted to do a few live videos for my online people on my like Instagram and stuff like that. But obviously in the situation now, if we go into tier 3, then absolutely can't do it because you can't gather, even for work. But yeah, I'd love to kind of up the ante of like just do more stuff once we're back. Because to be honest, I'm missing a lot as well.
Yeah.
A lot.
So where can our listeners go to check out the new album? And I'm assuming you have YouTube and websites, that sort of, all that self-promotion-y stuff.
So my debut album will be released on UK time. So it's the 6th of November. And it will be absolutely everywhere. Spotify, Apple Music, Tidal, probably on YouTube as well. I think that they always kind of just, it goes on YouTube anyway, like all the songs, through this weird thing that they have. But that's okay. I don't mind about that.
Are you putting it up on Bandcamp?
I may do. To be honest, I think it'll be on iTunes.
Yeah.
It'll still be on iTunes. I was even thinking of doing a run of physical releases just for the people who like vinyl. But to be honest, I'm pretty open to it just being everywhere. I'd like people just to hear it. In whatever form they feel to hear it. Obviously, if I could, I would suggest out of all of them, I would say either the physical release, if I decide to go through with the vinyl release, which I probably will because I'd like to have a binaural book too.
Yeah.
But Tidal would be the best place to listen, merely because it will be in the highest quality.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's one of those, like, I always bring up Bandcamp because from what I understand, they seem to treat the artist the best.
Yeah, for sure.
So I don't want to say I push them. They're not a sponsor or anything, but, you know, if they're going to take care of you guys, then I think giving them a little shout out every once in a while isn't a bad thing.
Yeah, I reckon it will be on Bandcamp as well. Yeah. I just have to double check with AWOL, who are the distributor for Spiritual Records. They do that sort of side of things. So I reckon it'll probably have a Bandcamp release. But again, if anything, like I made the album totally out of love. I made it in my house.
Yeah.
Literally just with a laptop. And yeah, I'd love for people just to enjoy it. And whatever medium you decide to listen to it, even if you listen to it off of a phone like this or some good speakers at your friend's house at a party, it's all good. Like, I just would like people to hear it, you know?
Nice. Yeah, man, this was a pleasure. If you ever do come to the U.S., by all means, make sure you swing through Massachusetts. And there's plenty of places to play here. And, you know, when things are, quote, normal, I'll definitely be heading to the U.K. to hang out with you guys at Spiritual Records for sure.
Oh, for sure, man. You have to come. You absolutely have to come.
It definitely sounds like my kind of place.
For sure. I reckon you'd love it.
Yeah. So again, thanks for giving me the time. And our listeners, make sure you check out Jack Trouble's new release. By the time this goes up, it will definitely be released. And you know, follow him online. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you guys next week.
Thanks again, man.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. You can find us on all social medias at InebriArt or on Instagram at InebriArt6. You can email us at InebriArt@yahoo.com. And make sure you listen to the other podcasts on the InebriArt Podcast Network, including Bar Talk, Old Colony Cast, Retro Redoctopus, America's Hometown Horror Podcast, and our newest one, Theme Park Legends, a podcast about working at theme parks. What else? And we'll catch you again next time.